From the land, the Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of December 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's out of New Market, Indiana. A bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Dave Dickey will be here with a look at today's agricultural news for the afternoon. And Elaine Cubb is back with another marketing term. Today, she'll help us decide where the best home for a bushel of grain might be and how we can define geographical arbitrage. It all comes up during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is, after all, public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers in Chicago as they finished up on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures finished like this. The March contract and the soft red winter wheat on a close at $8.10. That's up to July at $8.30, 2.75 higher. Those are closes. Settlement prices in Kansas City with the July hard red at $8.73.75. It finished down 8.25. March corn at $7.19, 5 cents lower for the day. The May at $7.23.75, down 3.75. And July futures at $7.20.25. It finished 4.75 of a cent lower. September contract at 6.41.5, down 1.75. And the December futures in the corn pit at 1.5 higher, 6.23.5, the settlement price there. January beans at 14.66, down 30.25 for the day. The March at 29.75 lower, 14.58.5. And the May beans at 14.43.5. Down 23.75. July futures 14.31.25, down 20.5. And the November contract at $13.09, a dime lower on the afternoon. Bean meal futures at 444.90. That's down $10.50. Bean oil at 49.17, down 62. Live cattle futures on the day finished the February at 132.95. That's 55 cents lower for 100 pounds. April futures in the live cattle at 137.12.5, down 45. The March futures at $154.40, a loss today of $1.85. The April futures down $1.57.5 at $156.07. And lean hogs on the afternoon, April contract $90.27.5, 47.5 cents higher. May futures at $98 even on their settlement price. They were up 47.5 cents as well. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, and it comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, right here on Illinois Public Media. Let's check the outside markets as they finished up on the afternoon. Crude oil futures in the nearby contract trading the February at $88 and a nickel. That's 85 cents higher. The RBOB gasoline at 269.5, up 4 cents for the day. Ethanol at 225.8. That's 1.9 lower. And the spread between the two is 5.9 of a cent wider at 43.7 of a cent. Remember, when we started giving you those numbers in August, they were about 60 cents and narrowed all the way to a spread of about 20 cents. The wider the spread, the more positive it is, the better it is to blend ethanol into the nation's gasoline supply. January contract for the natural gas at $3.40.9. That's a nickel and a tenth higher for the day. And the heating oil or diesel fuel up 4.2 cents at $2.99.8. Gold futures on the afternoon at $1,669.80, down 27.5 cents, and the dollar at 79.35. That's 0.20 higher for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high near 47 degrees on a south-southwest wind. That'll be at about 13 to 17 miles an hour. It'll gust all the way to 24 this afternoon. Partly cloudy this evening, a low of 31, west-southwest winds at 5 to 10, and then tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a low, or rather high of 48 degrees. It'll be light and variable for our winds. Out of the east at 9 to 14, they'll gust all the way to 20. And then Wednesday night, a low of just 41 degrees. Occasional showers. Rain will continue right into noon on Thursday. Then snow likely, cloudy, a high of 46 degrees. That rain, by the way, starts on Wednesday evening, and the chance in the area is set at 90%. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather. He is in Cheyenne, Wyoming. This is Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the soybeans because that's where all the news was and action was in the pit for the day. Tell me what happened.
Well, it started off this morning with some cancellations by China and unknown. That kicked us in the teeth or in the shins to start the day, and we started trading a little lower. The nearby January futures then went through their 10-day, their 40-day, and their 200-day moving averages later in the day, which added some other weakness too. Seemed like they were going to find some support about 1470. The 200-day moving average is 72.5, and of course, we closed below that today, so we've got some more technical picture looking not very good. Also, if you look at the chart, it seems like we've sort of completed a head and shoulders on those beans, so not looking very pretty.
Well, it is the end of the year. Do you think it's the start of something different in the bean market?
Well, we've got the beneficial forecast in some of the growing areas where it has been overly dry and has caught up a little bit of moisture in Brazil. We are seeing that, some of the Chinese businesses trying to look ahead to see when Brazil's beans will be ready and maybe cut back so much from us. But, we had some more sales done known today and whatever along the way. So, it doesn't feel like it's all over yet, but it does feel like we are pushing a little bit to the downside going into this very thin trade week.
It's a very thin trade week. If we push far enough to the downside, things do catch as while we cross those technical limits on the bottom side. Does it give you a thought process that the producers might want to log in some more sales for their new crop?
There was some of the major advisory firms that did have an order in that if we got below 1304 or 1303 today on the November beans on a closing basis, that they wanted to sell some. 1304 held, so they didn't add to those sales. But, we were hoping for a little bounce back up a little bit, and we did want to get some sales on here before the middle of January.
It is just December, and I don't suppose that there would be many beans that could make it out of South America. Maybe until what, the end of January? Do they come much earlier than that?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you're going to have any great amount in that time period. And, the Chinese have been very aggressive about buying and shipping beans. So, it has been a very positive thing in our bean market that way. And as we look back at history, 1465.5 this afternoon on beans is not a shabby number.
And 1310, I suppose, isn't too terribly bad for the new crop either.
No, it is not, Todd. It's been, we were thrilled to death when we could put our first sale of $13 beans on last year, and it, even if it seemed bad compared to harvest price, it was still a moneymaker.
Any news in the corn pit for the day?
The corn pit pretty much following along. We've lacked hard on our exports. We've that's what's really sort of thrown the wrench into things. But, looking ahead now to that January report, we're going to look and see, will we cut some of the production or some of the harvested acres along the way? Then we'll probably cut some of our exports. But I think that our carryout number is going to still stay low.
Yeah, the January reports will also include the stocks numbers, maybe give us some better idea of what feeding's been like for the livestock industry.
Yeah, and I think that, with the way the wheat price has been as of late, wheat's not substituting a whole lot. We've been using corn and bean meal this year rather than dipping into that wheat market. So, I think our usage as far as feed's going to be right on up there.
Hey, speaking of January, on the 25th of the month, and I know you know this, but we just started to talk about this on the air just a bit. We'll be hosting a fundraiser for the College of ACES, for the Agricultural Communications Endowment, and for the hospitality folks. And in part, it's due to something that you got me up to in, the fall. We were at the All Ag Day event at the football program, and picked up a little of State Fair Grand Champion Barrow, the meat. And, thanks to you, Wayne, and to Paul Cooley and Jackie Vakes, we'll be having a fundraiser on the 25th of the month. And
You like crazy friends like Paul Cooley and Jackie and I?
Yeah.
All of a sudden we bid on a pig and tell you you're part of it.
Yeah. You don't want to sit too close to you. You're bidding on the pig and suddenly I'm in.
We had fun and it went towards the scholarship fund over there at the University of Illinois.
Yeah.
And, a lot of good alums. We love to support our school.
Yeah. Well, not only did it go towards that scholarship fund, but it went to Orion Samuelson Scholarship Fund, right?
Yes, it did.
And guess what? Orion's going to come down and sign some books for us and be at the event on the 25th of January. All those details, of course, are yet to come out, but I want to give everybody kind of a heads up so that they're ready to come over
like
and see us.
Yeah, we'd like to see a lot of people save that date and come down and see us. A great opportunity to get together, to meet Orion personally and talk with us, and also to support our good state school.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. And Todd, I think it's going to be after Christmas where I'm back on the show, so I'd like to take this opportunity to wish a Merry Christmas to all our listeners.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you too, Wayne. Thank you.
Thanks.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Speaking of thank yous, I haven't taken the time probably in months to thank you for listening to the program. It really means a lot to me. I hope it helps out. I really do. I hope it makes a difference. Thanks so much for listening to Illinois Public Media and the Closing Market Report. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment. He has a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, one-third of the U.S. Senate signed a letter advocating the passage of a farm bill, but Southerners argue is unfair to their commodities. In the bipartisan letter, the 33 senators called for passage of the farm bill before the end of the year, and said that bill should be the bill passed by the Senate in June. Farm bill negotiations were at a standstill yesterday. The Senate letter has inflamed regional passions. Rice producers noted that, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the Senate bill would hammer rice producers by reducing their safety net by more than 64%. Meanwhile, if farm legislation is left adrift, farmers could face the prospect of returning to an antiquated system for pricing milk that would bring big price increases for consumers, under which milk could surge to $6 a gallon. The Environmental Protection Agency has released updated national air quality standards that made no changes to farm dust rules, leaving the existing daily standard for fine particles or the existing daily standard for coarse particles, which includes dust from farms and other sources. EPA finalized an update to its national air quality standards for harmful fine particle pollution, including soot. A new research report by Rabobank's Food and Agribusiness Research and Advisory Group says that the global beef industry is likely to see record prices in 2013. This follows lower prices at the end of this year. A combination of a lethargic world economy, slightly large global supply, and recovery of herds in Brazil, Argentina, and Australia has weighed on global prices in the fourth quarter. U.S. agribusiness Cargill plans to spend $91 million to set up a corn milling plant in India. The plant would be Cargill's largest investment in India. The facility is expected to start operations by the third quarter of 2014. Russia's Federal Statistics Agency today says that Russian stocks of grain, which consist mainly of wheat but also include barley and corn, totaled 29.7 million metric tons on December 1st. That's around 30% less than a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report Commodity Week and next month's Corn and Soybean Classic Series. Those are happening the 7th, 8th, and 9th, the 14th, 15th, and 16th of the month of January. on the 7th of the month. We'll be right here in Champaign, Mount Vernon on the 8th, and then we'll be headed on the 9th of that month to Springfield. On the following week, we'll be in Peoria, Moline, and Malta. If you didn't get a chance to sign up, no worries. You can always walk in. All the details are on the CropSciConferences.com website, but don't worry about it. You can just visit our website at willag.org, hit calendar, and you'll find the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. In fact, you'll find all kinds of meetings in the month of January and February. It's all at willag.org. It's time to define a marketing term. Commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb, joins us. She believes, of course, the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices of the industry. Today, she'll help us decide where the best home is for a bushel of grain, whatever that might be. I think this is also known, Elaine, as geographical arbitrage. So how is it that the market, maybe a farmer, decides where the best home for a bushel might be? And let's use as an example, sunflower.
Sunflowers are an excellent example because think of it, you know, nobody really in Iowa or Illinois, let's say, you don't see a lot of sunflowers grown there. And part of the reason is that there is no home for them. The actual production of these crops tends to center around the places where there are processing facilities for them. So think sugar beets in Minnesota and North Dakota, sunflowers in North Dakota or western Kansas. I mean, you have to think about how far away. If you grew a field of sunflowers in Iowa, you would eat up most of the value of those sunflowers just shipping them to Goodland, Kansas, for instance. So there is an example of why you wouldn't even produce something in order to sell it and make an arbitrage.
Because it's simply too far and costs too much money to ship it at that point.
Exactly. But the more common example of geographical arbitrage finding a bushel's best home would be to take the grain that's in your bin right now and consider all of the potential buyers that you could potentially take that grain to. And that is an entire universe of buyers. But realistically, for your time's sake, if you're a farmer, you're only going to look at places maybe within a 50-mile radius or within a 100-mile radius, depending on your trucking opportunities. So now you've narrowed down the list, and now you're just looking at their bids, and their bids are going to depend on what they're doing with them. So some of your buyers might be loading it onto rail and sending it to cattle feeders, let's say. Some of your buyers might be loading it onto barges, particularly if you're in Illinois, and that is really affecting basis this month. The trying to predict what's going to happen with river freight and sending that down to the Gulf for exports. So there's a number of directions that this goes, and it's a decision that every farmer makes for his individual bushels, and then it's a decision that the commercial companies make, whether they should be sending this to the Gulf or the PNW or to domestic users.
Well, let's say that the owner, whether that be a farmer or a elevator, has the grain in their bin. What are their decision processes to decide geographically where to ship or sell the grain to the next owner's hand?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about some of this last week with the carry. So first decision you need to make is when you're going to move it. Let's say that somebody has decided he wants to get some income right after the first of the year, so you're going to move it in January. Your next step is to look at all of your potential buyers and then just make the decision based on price. So all of the buyers are going to have a different basis bid. And then you just back that basis bid off from the present futures price. And so you can compare each of these prices exactly according to their basis. Then maybe you just pick the buyer whose price minus your transportation costs to that buyer, however far away they may be, it gives you the most value. But on the other hand, sometimes it's not that easy because sometimes farmers are also going to be taking into consideration how long the lines are. Are they going to end up sitting in line at an ethanol plant for 2 hours? Or how quickly does the buyer pay? How well do they trust the counterparty risk of that buyer? So it's not always just a pure price decision, but it certainly can be done. You can make a matrix of the various prices that are being offered and then back off your transportation costs to get a pure geographical arbitrage.
Can you define counterparty risk for me since you brought it up?
Well, in this situation I'm talking about, would you take your grain to somebody that you feel might be going bankrupt in the next 3 weeks and maybe won't be able to write you a check? So that's when you're talking about finding a good home to sell your grain to, that's the counterparty risk you're worried about. If you deliver the grain to them, will they be able to pay you? And by and large, the answer is yes, but sometimes people have gotten into trouble.
Elaine Cubb is the author of Mastering the Grain Market. She's a commodity broker and an analyst. Today, she helped us to determine how to best decide the home for a bushel of grain. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Last week, the agricultural economist from this campus spent the week on the road presenting to farmers around the state at the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. You'll see all those presentations on their website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu starting next week. If you didn't happen to make those meetings or you just want to refresh your memory, I was with them, of course, and talked with each and every one of them about their topics. Bruce Sherry spoke on crop insurance premiums for 2013. There is an expectation, of course, that those premiums will be higher in this coming year than they were last year.
That's what lots of people think, and of course that would make sense if we were talking about traditional automobile insurance, for example, but the rating system for crop insurance is really quite different, and in fact 2013 will generally, in the northern half of Illinois, involve rate reductions for both corn and soybeans. For 2013 and for soybeans, in fact, all of the state will see a decrease. Parts of the southern part of Illinois will increase a bit, but it's not due to the drought.
What is it due to?
There has been an ongoing effort by RMA to, in effect, right-size the premium calculations and looking at longer-term historic loss rates, controlling for differences in things like weather. And so a drought doesn't result in a direct, for example, increase in rates, getting them so that the long-term loss rates and premiums are more in line with each other. That study has been going on for several years, and there are lots of components to that.
Can you go through a couple of them? I assume this is an actuarial sort of function.
Absolutely. So in addition to using historic data, RMA has come up with an approach to try to control for differences in weather through time, for acreage adjustments through time, and the fact that the nature of crop insurance we buy today is really quite different than the products we bought even 5 to 10 years ago.
Let's talk about just crop insurance prices and take DeKalb County in the northern part of the state. Last year, those rates were reduced in lots of areas. DeKalb County actually did not have a rate reduction last year. That will not be the case this year, and maybe we can use it as an example of what's happening across the state.
Right. So continuing with RMA's, what they refer to as their rating study adjustments, the northern part of the state last year received on average 10 to 15% rate declines. This year, going into 2013, another 10 to 15, in some cases even larger. DeKalb last year was zeroed out, as were several other counties, because of some questions about how the historic performance could be used to adjust rates going forward. And while they were, as I said, right-sizing it, calculating the impacts of things like what is called the coverage level differential and the relationship between volatilities and such. And so it's really a very complicated rating system, but it helps to equilibrate county-to-county rate differences as well through time.
Bruce Sherrick, Ag Finance at the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Just a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
It's National Roast Suckling Pig Day. A suckling pig is a young pig that has only been fed on its mother's milk. Traditionally, the dish is roasted and the skin is valued for pork rinds. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, New Jersey became the third state to enter the United States. New Jersey's many truck farms, orchards, and flower gardens give the state its nickname, the Garden State. In 1865, slavery was abolished in the United States. The 13th Amendment proclaimed neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, save as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist in the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. At the time of its ratification, slavery remained legal only in Delaware, Kentucky, and Missouri. By the way, Illinois was the first state of the Union to ratify the amendment, passing it on February 1st of 1865. Also in 1865, the first U.S. cattle importation law was passed, and in 1991, the International Project to Save the Brazilian Rainforest was launched. The controversial initiative attempted to stem new logging and ranching in the Amazon. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us now to look at the agricultural weather forecast. Let's start in a growing region that's not growing a lot. That's right here to begin with. What do we look like as we head towards Christmas, just a week from today?
Well, I would advise folks to get ready for Jack Frost and Old Man Winter. It's been a slow start to winter, but things are going to really ramp up, especially here in the next couple of days with a deep storm hitting the middle part of the nation, Iowa, Nebraska, portions of Kansas, Colorado, then into the Great Lakes region, and also northern and central Illinois and the rest of the Corn Belt. Combination of rain and then some snow and some very cold air will come behind it. The storm that's going to come out of the Rockies is going to produce a decent swath of snow across some of the hardest drought-hit areas of Nebraska, northeastern Colorado, portions of Kansas. Iowa's going to do well with this system as well. And it's going to be followed by more cold and more wintry weather. So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. We're going to see a wintry weather pattern set up. That's not going to be fun for a lot of folks, but at the same time, it is going to offer up some better chances for precipitation for many of the dry areas of the Central Plains.
Is it a change that might bring more rainfall or precipitation in the way of snow to those driest areas of the nation on a more regular basis?
Well, at least for the next 2 or 3 weeks, we see some opportunity. Now, it's going to come with a much colder weather pattern, so when it gets cold like this, you don't tend to, at least in the snow areas, get a lot of precipitation, at least water content in that snow. But this is more than they've seen in weeks, especially for Nebraska and portions of Iowa, portions of Kansas. And there's another storm that's going to be developing Christmas week that has the potential to maybe draw in Gulf of Mexico moisture. So I'm a bit bullish on some really good chances for some of those central and southern plains to see at least the first measurable precipitation in a long time with these two storms.
It would be a very good Christmas present for those who've been suffering such dry conditions. Let's move to South America. Tell me how their crop conditions are.
Well, Brazil looks very good, adequate with soil moisture, and there's more precipitation coming to Brazil. When it comes to soil moisture conditions, though, we're still a bit dry in Argentina. And as we look at the forecast, we see more opportunities for precipitation, especially Brazil, but also northern and central eastern areas of Argentina. So right now, I would say things are looking pretty good. There's some dry areas in Argentina that need to get sorted out, but otherwise, not looking bad down there.
All right. Thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time, and you have a great holiday season.
We'll talk to you next year.
Mm-hmm. That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.